With that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Scott Miller, who again is joining us from EPA Region 4 and will serve as our session facilitator. So Scott, I'm going to make sure that everyone can see your video and I'm going to turn it to you to get things started.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jane. Welcome, everyone. We are so glad you could join us for this webinar looking at EPA Region 4's community reuse of Superfund sites. My name is Scott Miller, and I'm a section chief and one of the Superfund redevelopment coordinators at EPA Region 4 in Atlanta. EPA Superfund redevelopment webinars share valuable site reuse information, success stories, as well as challenges, with the hope that this information will inspire you to consider reuse on impaired or remediated properties. Each webinar provides guidance, tools, and lessons learned to support the successful reuse of Superfund sites. Today, this webinar will highlight the innovative community reuse of the Brown's Dump site, where the Clairolite Mission operates a teaching farm, providing environmental education projects, job training, an on-site farmers market, and fresh produce for missions programs to feed homeless and other disadvantaged community members. I am joined by Anna Cornelius Martin and Latanya Spencer from EPA Region 4, as well as Mallory Schott from the Clairolite Mission and Paulette Turner, the owner of the site. First, I will kick us off with a quick introduction to the Superfund redevelopment program. Anna Cornelius and Latanya Spencer Harvey will then give us an overview of Brown's Dump Superfund alternative site. After that, we'll hear from Mallory Schott from the Clairolite Mission and the site owner, Paulette Turner. They will discuss the innovative community reuse of the site, providing their perspective and discussing the use of the site. Lastly, I will give an overview of Superfund redevelopment resources, tools, and contacts before heading into the question and answer session. Please feel free to submit questions anytime during the webinar. We will answer them at the end of the webinar. So with that, let's get started. The Superfund redevelopment program supports EPA staff and works with communities and other partners in considering future use opportunities and in integrating appropriate reuse options into the cleanup process. There are numerous examples of successful Superfund site reuse all over the country. It's important to note that reuse considerations can and should be explored at any point during the Superfund cleanup process. There are many different ways to reuse Superfund sites, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution to determining which reuse type will be most appropriate. The redevelopment of Superfund sites poses unique challenges in terms of protectiveness, stigma, and liability protections. However, they also allow for a broad spectrum of safe and productive reuse possibilities. While EPA doesn't own the sites or control local land use, helping to return contaminated sites to productive use is important for communities and is an important part of EPA's mission. And the good news is that EPA has a wide array of tools, resources, and support for local governments, communities, and developers to use on these sites. These photos are from the Calhoun Park area in Charleston, South Carolina. As I mentioned before, helping to return Superfund sites back to productive use is part of EPA's mission. The benefits to local governments and communities include creating jobs, increasing the tax base, and revitalizing neighborhoods, and restoring a sense of community by bringing housing, retail, recreation, or ecosystem services. Redevelopment also benefits EPA by bringing certainty to anticipated land uses with a new owner who will be a good steward of the site. The new owner may also be willing to take on part of the cleanup or to enhance the cleanup. Examples of Superfund redevelopment include government offices, shopping centers, manufacturing facilities, affordable housing, recreational fields, ecological preserves, and more. On the left is the Emmett Reed Community Center pool on the Jacksonville Ash Superfund site in Jacksonville, Florida. The site was formerly used by the city of Jacksonville to incinerate municipal solid waste. And on the right, a former historic mining area is now a restored pollinator habitat on the Copper Basin Mining District Superfund site in Copper Hill, Tennessee. As you can see, these sites underwent dramatic transformations from their previous industrial uses. some local governments, community members, and developers think that a site is not ready for reuse until the cleanup is done. Not true. In fact, the earlier EPA can identify the end use and the redeveloper, the better. Many sites can be partially reused during the cleanup. EPA, local governments, and developers can coordinate cleanups to maximize both cleanup and reuse benefits. For example, planned parking lots can be used as caps for contamination, or monitoring wells may be located to allow better reuse of the property. It is also possible for the prospective purchaser to agree to take on part of the cleanup to meet the project's timelines or goals. As I said before, EPA has lots of tools, resources, and supports for local governments, community members, and developers who want to get these sites back into productive use. I will share some of those resources and tools briefly at the end of today's presentation. With that, I'm going to pass it off to Anna Cornelius Martin and Latanya Spencer Harvey, who will discuss the EPA Region 4 Superfund alternative site, Brown's Dumps. Brown's Dump. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anna Cornelius Martin, and I'm the newly assigned remedial project manager for the Jacksonville Ash and Brown's Dump sites. And Scott did a great job with kind of leading the segue into this, because Jacksonville Ash is definitely an example of how those special tools that can help and expedite the cleanup and then get us further along to redevelopment and reuse of Superfund sites can be used and be beneficial. So just as a little bit of a snapshot of what's been done at Jacksonville Ash and Brown's Dump, I'm going to just provide a couple of highlights about the cleanup and the background. If you wouldn't mind, Gene, advancing to the next slide. So Jacksonville Ash, it kind of serves as the parent site to the contamination. As Scott mentioned, there were two former incinerators located on this particular area where there were contaminated metals that were incinerated. And as a result, you have contaminated ash. And that contaminated ash sat near some soil, and that soil and ash were commingled. And now we have a contaminated mixture. And that contaminated mixture went from those two former incinerator areas into residential and commercial properties. And they were used largely for backfill. And then the remainder of that contaminated mixture was then sent to Brown's Dump, which is not too far from these two former incinerator locations, and it was buried. So we have a large footprint of contamination. We have very vulnerable communities included in these residential developments and elementary schools, middle schools, high schools. So the city of Jacksonville served as kind of the regulators, the PRP, the potential responsible party, and certainly did take a head start in trying to get ahead of the contamination. They entered into an administrative consent of decree with EPA, and EPA further supported those expeditious cleanup efforts by saying, you know what, I think we can help you out a little bit better. Instead of naming this site as a national priorities list Superfund site, let's classify it as a Superfund alternative approach site. And this just allows more flexibility. And this is the tool that Scott was alluding to that can help us expedite these cleanup activities. So if you wouldn't mind advancing to the next slide, Gene. Superfund alternative sites, I love the way how it's coined on the webpage. If you looked at the EPA definition of Superfund alternative site approaches, is that it's not a shortcut to say we're not going through the CERCLA process. It actually just, it maximizes our time. It reduces the amount of time, the cost, resources that are required to get through the CERCLA process. So we still go through the CERCLA process, but we have that flexibility to say we can cut this a little bit quicker, we can do this. And it's largely because of the community engagement and the stakeholder involvement that's included. So what we have here with this SAA site, the Superfund Alternative Approach site, is we were able to fast track quite a bit of the cleanup activities, which largely included excavating that contaminated mixture from those residential and commercial properties and transporting them to an appropriate landfill. And an example of how that fast track really was beneficial was where we had to address the cleanup at two schools, particularly the Darnell Cookman Middle High School and the John E. Ford Elementary School, where this fast track, this SAA tool, allowed for the cleanup to happen during the summer. So it wouldn't impact the students' learning and their schedules and their health. So that was a benefit to that. And it's an example of how fast track tools definitely help with expediting the cleanup so that we can return to a reuse and redevelopment project. So other measures that were implemented at the site to ensure the protectiveness of public health and the environment included us implementing institutional controls. And that's largely just saying we put in fences, we put in signage in areas where we weren't able to get to that contaminated soil mixture. So that is how we cleaned the site up. And great news is to date, we have about 97% of the site cleaned up. We are definitely going to talk about some of those highlights of reuse and redevelopment and that community engagement part that's going to be discussed with LaTanya Spencer-Harvey in the next slide. Before we move on, if you have any questions or concerns about the cleanup activities, my contact information as well as LaTanya's will be provided at the end of this session of the webinar. Thank you. LaTanya?
Next slide. Hi, everyone. I'm LaTanya Spencer, and it says public affairs specialist, but I've been the community involvement coordinator for the Brown Stump as well as the Jacksonville ash site since the early 2000s. So I'm going to go through some of the community involvement, community engagement activities that we participated in throughout the Superfund process at the Superfund alternative site for Brown Stump and Jack's Ash. Next slide. So the first thing that we did was we start having community meetings because there was some conflict about, as Anna said, how we were going to identify the site. So we had many meetings. There was a lot of media concern. We had to deal with the media, especially with the Brown Stump site because it was an elementary school. So a lot of people were concerned about the children. There was a need to ensure that we explain to everybody what roles and responsibilities were from the school board to the school, to EPA, to the city. So we had a lot of community meetings so that people could understand not only the process that we were going through, but also understanding roles and responsibilities. Another thing that we had to do was get access authorizations and agreements. We could never go on anybody's property, whether it's commercial, industrial, or residential, without having proper agreements that we're going onto those properties. And an access authorization or agreement just simply states that we're going on your property to do some sampling. It explains how the sampling will be done. And it also lets you know that you are not responsible for the sampling. You're not responsible for the contamination and that is being done under CERCLA law by EPA. Another tool that we used at Jacksonville Ash as well as Brown Stump was technical assistance grants. We actually awarded one for each area. We normally do it for each site, but we had enough community leaders and enough interest that we awarded four technical assistance grants. And we worked with those community leaders and with those community groups to get information out to the community, again, to help them understand roles and responsibilities, to get access agreements. In the process of doing the community meetings, getting the access and working with the technical assistance groups and the technical assistance advisors, the city of Jacksonville concurred with EPA to hire a contractor for assistance because we had so much work to do. And the contractor that was hired was Hester Group. And Hester Group actually opened an office over in Durkeyville, and they actually branded the project as Project Newground. And so they opened an office that gave people the opportunity to come in and get information about Brown's Dump or Jacksonville Ash, to talk to people about getting access authorizations, getting their properties cleaned or sampled. And so there was a local aspect to having people to have someone to come and talk to. This contractor also assisted us with doing temporary relocations where we had to temporarily relocate people for residential access to clean up their properties, especially people that had medical conditions or small kids. And as Anna mentioned, we tried to do a lot of the cleanup when kids were out of school. So if they were at home, we tried to provide temporary relocation through the Hester Group, who was contracted through the city. And also one thing that I forgot to put on this particular slide was that we actually had a Superfund jobs training initiative that we did here, which was another tool we used to hire people from the community to help with the cleanup process. And so they go through a job training process and they actually get jobs with the contractor, with the prime or the sub, and they're able to work. And even after the cleanup is completed or was completed, some of those folks moved on to work for FEMA and other environmental companies with the experience and with the training that they received. So that was another success story we had from this. As Anna mentioned, we had residential property cleanups. We're 97% completed. Hopefully we'll be sending something out soon to say we're done. And the last thing that I want to mention is that we had a Jacksonville Integrated Planning Project, which alluded to some of the stuff that Scott initially started talking about, because we realized that the community had more problems than just the cleanup that we had going on. So the Jacksonville Integrated Planning Project actually included Brown's Dump, as well as Jacksonville Ash, Fairfax, and a couple of other Superfund sites in the area. And it was coined as Zone 1. And through that process, we brought in local community leaders, some of the local residential folks, City of Jacksonville. We collaborated with some other federal agencies, some nonprofit organizations, some environmental organizations to come in. And we did some charrettes to talk about what other issues are in the area. And some of those issues alluded to transportation issues, medical center issues, getting medical assistance, local food, local growth, having good food sources in the area, grocery stores, as well as a couple of other things. But those were some of the top three things that came out of that. And we sat down and did those charrettes and came back together and talked about who needed to be at the table. And we tried to get all of those people to the table, and we turned it over to the local community to continue the process after we were completed with the charrettes and the larger group meetings. Lessons learned, and I'm gonna make this short because I wanna make sure we have time for questions. I think one of the biggest lessons is learning to listen upfront. Everyone has a story, and we would love to hear everyone's story, and we listen to everyone's story. But sometimes time is of the essence, and we wanna get started with the process. And when we understand that people are having health issues, after we hear a few stories, it's kind of like, we know there's a problem, but you know, we wanna get started with how we can help you and how we can assist you, and if there's other people we need to bring to the table. Another lesson learned is explaining to people, as you all may realize, I like to talk about roles and responsibilities up front. So another lesson learned is to make sure people understand who's responsible for what and who they need to go to. If there's health concerns, we need to go ahead and get the health department involved early on. If it's a transportation issue, we need to talk to the local government or to the Department of Transportation and get them on board. So doing some of the things earlier, especially when it comes to redevelopment, is to start early. As Scott mentioned, you know, it's a two-lane street. We're going in the same direction on this side. And it works hand in hand with the cleanup and with the Superfund redevelopment. So the earlier we can get started with Superfund redevelopment, it helps to drive some of the Superfund technical activities. And I'm going to stop right there. Thanks.
All right, I think we're ready to move on. So Mallory, it looks like I can see you on camera, correct?
Yes, I guess it's my turn.
Okay, so let me call up your slides and feel free to take it away.
All right, well, thanks everyone. I'm so excited to be here and share on behalf of White Harvest Farms and the Claire White Mission. I have been with the farm for about almost 2 years now, in October. So I'm relatively new, and a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, I'm learning new things about, you know, what was done 10 years ago. But this is really about how we're moving forward and reusing the site. We can go to the next slide. As an organic, sustainable farm. So overall, we have about 10 and a half acres, and it's located on Moncrief Road. We're practicing no-till, regenerative, even biological agriculture. And currently we're funded through a National Resource Conservation Service Conservation Innovation Grant. And we're doing some really cool work that I'll share later on. So you can go to the next one. So the Clara White Mission has been part of this affected community for such a long time. So in 1904, our founder, Eartha White, purchased this land from a gentleman named A.L. Lewis. And if any of you know A.L. Lewis, or I don't know if we have any Floridians in the crowd, he was Florida's first African-American millionaire. And he started the Afro-American Life Insurance Company, as well as American Beach, which is just a little bit north of here. So he really liked Eartha White and sold her this land. It was about 20 acres for a really good deal. And I just love sharing that story because it just shows how integrated, you know, the mission really is in this community and how important this land is to the community. Right through the center of the farm runs this small creek called Moncrief Creek. And some of the work we're doing is to remove trash and clean up the creek. So that's something that we do every month on the farm. In addition to the farm, the mission does a feeding program, housing, veterans housing, as well as job training. And some of those things happen at the farm. This community lacks access to fresh food. So that's a big part of our mission, is to grow food, increase food access. And that's one thing that we're doing through our programming. Last thing I wanted to mention is that every month we engage the community at a community council meeting and get feedback and you know, make sure that the community is staying involved in what we're doing. All right, so we'll go next. So this work that we're doing with the USDA, NRCS, it's really cool. We're practicing biological agriculture, so using beneficial bacteria, fungi, protozoa, and nematodes to reduce our inputs of fertilizer, as well as practicing integrative pest management and, you know, reducing the use of pesticides. You know, any pesticides that we do use are obviously organic and, you know, not harmful to the environment. You know, we're located right on a waterway, so we can see the impact of, you know, any runoff. We know exactly where it goes. And so we're really doing everything we can to farm really sustainably with limited fertilizers and pesticides on our site. We also share this information very freely. You know, unlike most farms, our farm is open to the public. So you can come, you can hear about what we're doing and learn some new things. One other thing that we do at the farm is we make compost. So we have a really cool compost or soil biologist, and he qualifies our compost based on the amount of biological life. So the amount of bacteria and fungi and organisms that make your soil healthy and ultimately make nutrients available to your plants, because we know that plants work in a symphony with bacteria and fungi and other organisms in the soil. So we're making compost that really inoculates your soil with these beneficial soil organisms. All right, we can go next. So this is sort of what we do on a daily basis. What I've been alluding to, we engage and educate around sustainable agriculture, culinary training, and youth programming. And we do this right on our farm on Moncrief. You can see it in the background. We mainly demonstrate annual vegetable cultivation, so growing your collard greens and tomatoes and cucumbers. But we also have a beekeeper partner who demonstrates beekeeping on site. And then obviously we demonstrate compost making. And we hope to continue to expand this into egg production. We really want chickens. And more urban agroforestry. So growing more fruit trees and increasing the variety as well as, you know, longevity of everything that we're growing on the farm. We sell our produce on the farm on site every Saturday from 10 to 2. Our farming season in Florida is kind of October through June. So it's the opposite of everywhere else in the country. We sort of take a break from, you know, July, August, September, when it's just like really hot. And so we operate our market those months, and we're part of this really cool grant program that's in most parts of the country, but I know it's specific to the state. It's called the Fresh Access Bucks Program. And so they reimburse us for 50% of any EBT charge. So we're able to give any EBT transaction 50% off of their purchase at our farmers market. And so this is great because it encourages people who use EBT to buy more vegetables. And it also supports specifically Florida farmers and reimburses Florida farmers for the produce that they sell. Lastly, we offer free classes on the farm. So every Saturday, in addition to the market, we offer a free class, introduction to gardening, introduction to composting. We do an herbal tea and edible weeds class, which are really fun. And then we offer volunteer opportunities every week. All right, we can go to the next one. We're really excited about some coming expansion to the farm site. So we worked with the city of Jacksonville to build this wonderful Quonset hut. This is going to be about, 6,000 square feet. I'm bad with stuff like that. But the goal here is to run a farmer's market and not only to sell our produce, but to sell produce from other farmers, artisans who make, you know, value-added products, candles, you know, they make dried teas or jams. So not only sell the produce that we grow and accept EBT, but also to encourage commerce and other people to come into this community and sell their stuff. We're anticipating completion. They were out there working today. So we're hoping that completion is done pretty soon here, maybe by the end of the year. And this is a multi-use space. So not only is this a farmer's market, but it's an opportunity for job training, events. And we're hoping to do some culinary training. So farm to table culinary inspiration, coming off the farm, and there's a kitchen in there, restrooms. And so really inspire people with what you can do by growing your own stuff and transforming it into something awesome that you can sell. All right, we'll go next. So I wanted to put this up so that you guys could have the opportunity to visit the farm virtually. I won't show this right now because it would be sort of repetitive, but there's some really cool shots in this video that we made. It's a virtual tour of the farm. You can find it by just, you know, Googling or searching White Harvest Farms on YouTube. And you can see here, we're making one of our compost piles. So this is the thermophilic compost method. And you can see, this is probably in the wintertime in Florida, but you can see how hot that pile is. So our piles get up to about 160 degrees and get turned 3 times. So they get pretty steamy. You could actually burn yourself with them. So we're really excited about that work. All right. And I think that just about finishes me up. So yeah, you're welcome to contact me if you need to. And yeah, thanks. Thanks everybody for this opportunity. I'm looking forward to the panel.
All right. Excellent. I believe Paulette is next. So Paulette, if you're able to unmute, feel free to say hello.
Hello, everyone. Yes, I am. I can hear everyone. My husband and I are the owners of the elementary school on Pierce Street. That's 4330 Pierce Street. And that is the old Mary McClune, McLeod school. And it was owned by a couple that apparently bought it from the city. They were interested in converting it into a large community center. Make a long story short, that didn't happen. So we were able to purchase the property. And our intent was to make it a small community grocery store, laundry facility, JEA stop station, things of that nature. But the city has several regulations that you have to, or hoops that you have to jump through. So we're in the process of trying to clear through some city and state guidelines. Now, we have since thought about revamping our idea to make it more accessible or much more community friendly by adding housing, senior housing and family housing complexes on the property. It's 14 acres, so we have a lot to a lot of property to do that on. Now, things are slow for us. I mean, as with COVID and everything, things literally came to a screeching halt. So we are just now getting back into the process of getting the wheels rolling again. But we are near the Clara White farm. And so the one thing that separates us is a train track. And I'm hoping that if the city is going to put in a trolley system similar to what they have in San Diego or the BART system in San Francisco or even the system in Chicago, that we can possibly get a stop there at our between the farm and the in our property so that people can have access to either place, whether they're living there or they need food, to go right over to the farm and pick some fresh vegetables up. So that's kind of where we're at. My presentation is short. If anyone has any questions.
All right, excellent. I believe we're going to hear from Scott Miller, and then we'll be taking our panel break here in just a moment. So, Scott, if you're still with us, you can come back on camera.
You bet. Thank you, Jane.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Actually, Scott, I am getting just a quick reminder here that I think we're going to stop for our panel now, if that's okay with everybody, just in the interest of time. So I would like to invite all of our speakers, if you're willing, for our panel segment to come back on camera. So for those who are willing and able, you can go right ahead and turn that video back on. And I'm going to pull down the slides here very briefly so that we can focus on our panelists as we go through some of our Q&A as part of that panel. So let me go ahead and change a few views around here. And I'm going to add some of our speakers here to the spotlight so that we can see them. And then Scott, I'll just give you a moment to get the screen rearranged so that you can see the question space. And whenever you are ready, feel free to get started with some of those questions.
Okay, fantastic. So have a number of questions here. One is, are public meetings held online or in person only? The agency holds public meetings in person as well as online, and we kind of adjust our strategy based on where we are with respect to the pandemic. Let's see. What activities are expedited in the Superfund alternative approach? Well, there are a number of activities that are expedited where a party is willing. We can get them into a consent order in an expedited fashion, saving the company time and money. And the investigation as well as the remediation can be accelerated by a number of years. Are you able to, You good, Jane?
Yep, okay. We're good. Go ahead.
Okay. Are you able to use this expedited Superfund process with landfills impacting tribes and rural communities? You are able to use an expedited, you are able to use a Superfund alternative approach. It is for the asking, and it is for people who are volunteering to move forward with an investigation and commit resources to not only investigating, but doing cleanups on an expedited fashion. And we take that into consideration on a site-by-site account based on factors there. Are any cleanup actions eliminated in the Superfund alternative process? They are most definitely not. How does a site get nominated or approved for this expedited process? the cleanup party asked for it, we consider it. And if it fits the circumstances that we look to, then we make that available to them. What motivates the responsible party? I'm sorry, if anyone has any additional items, I guess I'm feeling a little rushed. So we have 8 other questions. So I am going to kind of blast through some of these. So other panelists, please do step in if I'm talking too fast or what have you on that. So how does a site get nominated or approved for this expedite? I think we just answered that, which is they ask for it, and then the agency decides on a case-by-case basis if that's something that we can grant them. How do I get on the mailing list for updates at this site? Just ask for it, and we will put you on a mailing list for updates at this site. If you'll ask for it in the chat, give us your name and information, and we'd be happy to add you to that list.
And also, Scott, if you want to be added to the list, you can also go to the site profile, the EPA site profile. If you Google it, EPA Jacksonville Ash or EPA Brown Stump, you can actually go in and put your email and your name information and be requested to be put on the email on the site list there as well.
Thank you, LaTanya.
Hey, Scott.
Yes.
Just to make a point, since there's so many questions about the Superfund alternative approach and the use of that Superfund alternative approach for this site in Region 4, sites are evaluated by EPA for inclusion on the national priorities list. And there's actually an evaluation that includes a ranking, and sites that reach a threshold ranking are typically listed on the national priorities list. So Superfund alternative sites have to go through that evaluation process, and they would otherwise be listed typically on the national priorities list, just so there's no confusion that this is something other than federal Superfund site program cleanups. So Superfund alternative sites typically would be listed on the national priorities list. They rank high enough to be listed, but because there is a desire for an approach typically by a responsible party or a community, we can use that approach as an alternative to listing on the national priorities list.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Casey. So they've got one for Mallory here. This is a good one. Can members of community practice farming or help at the farm?
Absolutely. That is our favorite thing. we love help. We love meeting and talking with people from the community. So definitely we offer volunteer hours 3 different days a week, and then classes, as I said. So, and we get a fair amount of community involvement. We had a really lovely woman come today who was recently retired. She used to teach school. She used to teach at one of the schools around, and it's the best. Yeah. So absolutely.
Awesome. Do you want to, I guess, should they Google White Harvest Farms, or is there a direct?
The best way to figure out about our volunteering is through, you know, we have the Clara White Mission website, but we post all of our events on Eventbrite. So if you go on Eventbrite and just search White Harvest Farms, you can find all of the volunteer opportunities and register there ahead of time. So.
Awesome. Thank you, Mallory. It's another one on the Superfund alternative process. Well, I'm gonna hit this really. We are really talking about that a lot today. I'm kind of surprised. But what motivates the responsible party to expedite the cleanup action and the alternative process, and why the same drivers can't be used in the regular cleanup project? Well, actually, they can be used in the regular project. The thing that would motivate a responsible party to do this is it would reduce the cost to them to do this, and that Superfund sites that are listed to the NPL have to go through a whole process that Casey just described. It's expensive, and EPA looks to recover its costs in doing those evaluations, as well as placing them on the list. Also, generally accepted accounting principles require Superfund site responsible parties to reserve for the entire cost of the cleanup. It's very expensive. If You can find to reserve that kind of funding directly from your reserves over time. That's expensive. So it has to do with cost, money. It also has to do with a look at the public. You know, companies care about their public profile now a lot more than they did at one time, which is when you're seen to be cooperating with regulatory agencies, that is a positive thing in the consumer's mind. And so those are a couple of reasons, money, time, and image, which is where I would leave that. Does anyone want to add anything to that? So I'll go to the next question then. Are you monitoring food grown for any contaminants? And I guess that's Mallory's question.
Yeah, great question. So we're not actually actively monitoring the food, but we do actively monitor the soil. So we have a really strong relationship with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, who I imagine with all this language y'all are talking about, you know, they were the ones who sort of took it away from the EPA and then did all this stuff. And so they're still really involved. And just last year, we had a full round of soil samples done all around the farm. We've had our well tested. So we're definitely very aware of the risk there and monitoring that very often. So we monitor the soil to make sure that there's no contaminants. And also the DEP helps us just with institutional knowledge of the remediation, how it was done, what areas, you know, should be avoided and things like that. So the Florida DEP has been really helpful and has helped us monitor that.
Good. Thank you, Mallory. So I'm a former Jacksonville resident, familiar with these sites and glad to hear about their redevelopment. One presenter mentioned that residential properties were remediated and residents relocated. Were they able to return to their homes after remediation was completed? The answer is yes, they were.
Just to expand on that, just in case they wanted some more information really quick, the relocations were all temporary. We did not permanently relocate anyone. It was all temporary, trying not to go past 2 to 3 days. And for those people that had kids, we tried to do it in the summer so we would not have to worry about kids that had to be bused to school. So that is how we did the temporary relocation. And it was mostly done through our Project New Ground. With the Hester Group.
Awesome. Thank you, Latonya. There have been several references to low income and senior housing development at the cleaned up, former contaminated sites. I have concern about this approach violating the spirit of EJ. Where are we going to be more sensitive about EJ?
I'll take that, Scott. My name is Casey Luggett-Snyder, and I'm on detail to the National Superfund Redevelopment Program. So I work with all of the EPA regions. I actually am out of an EPA region in Dallas, Region 6 office, but I work with all the EPA regions to promote and facilitate equitable redevelopment on our Superfund sites. Clearly, it has always been a goal of EPA to return sites to beneficial reuse. And in particular, the emphasis over the last several years and continuing with this current administration is the focus on equitable development at our Superfund sites. We don't own the sites and we don't control land use. We don't control reuse. However, we can play a significant role in promoting redevelopment and reuse opportunities at Superfund sites across the country that really start to address some of the challenges and hurdles that our environmental justice communities have faced for a number of years. So it is clearly an emphasis in our program, and we have a number of opportunities where we have taken Superfund sites, cleaned them up to a level that is safe for residential reuse, and use the opportunity to promote within the local community and the local government using those properties for low-income housing. We're partnering with HUD, Housing and Urban Development Agency, and a number of other different federal agencies that also focus on low income and senior housing.
Thank you, Casey. Does anyone else want to say on to that? Good. Are community members updated on a continual basis even after cleanups are completed? Yes, they are. And you heard LaTanya speak to the website where we continue to have a mailing list. We also, not only do we continue to mail, but we also continue to have public meetings and periodic outreach. As time goes by, we conduct 5-year reviews of all the remediations that take place throughout the country, included here, and do check-ins on that and try and keep our ear to the ground with respect to community concerns. You want to add anything to that, LaTanya, or anyone else?
No, I think that covers everything. And as I mentioned earlier, Anna and I probably will be getting together to give an update since we're close to completion. So we'll probably be sending something out to the community here in the next couple of months.
Okay. Were there any health monitoring activities like community individual blood tests included as part of the site cleanup? Since this was deemed an alternative program, can it be assumed that health threats and exposures were minimal? Thank you for this webinar. The alternative process, I'm going to take a first shot at that, and then I'm sure that others will want to chime in. The alternative process has to do with reducing the process of the initial evaluation for inclusion on the NPL and for procedural steps such as entering into multiple agreements to conduct the investigation and the cleanup. It does not in any way suggest that there isn't the same amount of health data that's collected and evaluations that take place not only by the agency, but also by state agencies such as the Florida Department of Health. Does anyone want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just to echo, we just want to make certain that we're clear that, you know, just because a site is on that SAA, it's classified as an SAA, does not mean it's not a Superfund site, that it does not go through the CERCLA process. It goes through the same process. There's the same level of protectiveness for public health and the environment as with a national priorities list. Again, it's just an opportunity if you have the resources, such as money and labor, to offset some of the costs, that's how we can expedite the cleanup. So thank you, Scott.
And also, thank in you. Addition, just in case you wanted to know, they did have some high blood lead levels in some of the children, but we did have the health department to come in. Duval County did come in and do some sampling of blood lead levels in some of the kids and the adults around the Browns Dump area, because it was a school and there were some subsidized housing near there. And what they found was it didn't come from the contamination at the site, but the apartments were old and they had the big lead blinds still in the apartments, as well as some other things, lead-based paint, which was the issue from a long time ago. And a lot of the homes and the apartments in the area were old and did have lead-based paint and those large lead-based blinds. And so that was taken into consideration as well.
Awesome. Thank you, LaTanya. So back to the Superfund alternative process. How are the investigation or remediation steps expedited? They are expedited because we spend our time investigating and remediating instead of negotiating legal agreements or the amount of process time that it takes to evaluate and list a site on the national priority list, which is extensive. And then the last question that I have here is, why low income and senior housing? Does anyone else want to take redeveloped sites? So I'm going to ask Ms. Turner to talk to maybe why that was a selection or a considered selection for reuse at her land there, and then I'll take a shot at it in the main.
Well, for us, we wanted to give back to the community. That was first and foremost for us. And as we looked around the community, we saw that there was quite a distance between grocery stores, laundry facilities, even having a really nice complex. And that's right in the middle of a neighborhood. One part of it, of that neighborhood, is really needing help. The other part is where there are some nicer homes. So we wanted to have that property to be something where it would be extremely nice and start influencing the other areas, and maybe even other vendors would start coming into that area. It is also surrounded by 4 hospitals. So to have a complex that would offer something to seniors, something to adults, possibly a 24-hour daycare for any families that may live in that area or live in the complex that may work at those hospitals, and to have nursing personnel — I'm a retired nurse — nursing personnel on site that would offer any kind of medical help to the parents if their child is needing to take medication or they get sick or something of that nature, and they need to have someone to watch the child while they're at work. So our mindset is to have it to be an assistance to the community, as well as starting to help to change that community, because there are many houses over in that area, several that are empty. And I can't say enough about needing to change the way the environment looks. It when you change the way it looks, you're going to start bringing in or drawing other people into your areas, and possibly with some of that, with offering jobs, with having a supermarket, with having a laundry facility, with having some other things in that area on the property, you would be able to provide jobs for some of those people in the community. So we wanted to give something back to the community, and I'm hoping that we're not reaching for the stars, but right now our feet are grounded is into the idea of what we would like to see there, and all of those things are attainable for us. That's it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Turner. That's really good. To the other point, we have site reuses of all varieties, from single family residential to commercial to industrial to pollinator habitat. I mean, and do people want these sites? They do. They pay for them, and they do want them. And so there's an exciting universe of reuses throughout the country, such as this one. And there's no limitations to how these sites can be reused. I mean, we don't put any artificial limitations on that. So they're residential, commercial, all varieties of reuses.
And just to add to what Scott just said, please know that as we have been commissioned by our management, is that we don't leave Superfund sites in a blight. And so we try to work with communities, local government, and any CDCs, nonprofit organizations. As we go through the Superfund process, we try to work and collaborate with other organizations, like I mentioned earlier, so that there's a parallel track that if there is potential for redevelopment, that we can pull those people to the table and have some type of collaboration or charrettes or redevelopment opportunities before the site is completely cleaned up.
Thank you, LaTanya. And one more question. It's about Superfund alternative approach. Is the Superfund alternative approach similar to a state voluntary remediation program? Can you comment on the similarities and differences between these two types of programs? Well, every state voluntary cleanup program is a little different. Florida's is different than Georgia's. The federal is different than the states. But there is a similarity in that there is a real life inducement to get responsible parties in the front door and get them moving to expedite cleanups. And we have multiple ways that we do that at the federal government. by reducing costs, by also offering contribution protection for those who sign up early, which is similar to liability protections that states offer for those that move first, first and foremost. Florida has, most states have a voluntary remediation program, and there are some similarities. There are some also some differences, but the concept is the same. Those who move quickly and don't have to be basically forced to do a cleanup get the advantage of spending less of their resources in doing that and expedite the remediation, which saves them money over time. And with that, Jean, I think that was the last question. Are there other items for discussion?
I think, unfortunately, in the interest of time, we may have to move on to some of our final wrap-up items. So, Scott, I have been given some direction to move through those closing messages that you had for our audience. So you should see the slides are up with our Superfund redevelopment resources and contacts, and I'll turn it to you to cover that material.
Oh, okay. But I need to expedite that. Okay. So a couple of items. EPA has a lot of tools and resources to support for equitable development. You can access them using the Superfund Redevelopment Program links on the next few slides. Many resources can be found on the website, including regional seed resources and reuse planning, prospective purchaser inquiry calls, comfort status letters, and the EPA agreements. Here's a list of Superfund redevelopment coordinators by region. If you have any region-specific or site-specific questions, these are the folks you should reach out to as needed. You'll see my contact information listed here as well. If you have any general questions or would like more information about Superfund redevelopment, please don't hesitate to contact the project manager for EPA Superfund redevelopment, Frank Avasado or Casey Luckett-Snyder, LeVar Thomas, or myself. So thank you so much for your attendance and participation. It's good stuff. And I think, Jean, that we are through those resources that you wanted me to cover in a minute and a half or something.
We are indeed. Okay. So if it's okay with you, Scott, I'm just going to go through one or two really quick final reminders for our live audience before we close things out today. I do want to be sure to pass on thanks to each and every one of our speakers who took time to join us in today's live session. We really appreciated your time and expertise. And although we had a shorter session today, I think we got in some great Q&A with the audience. I've already gotten a number of thank you messages from the attendees thanking the speakers for taking time to address their questions. So the first thing I wanted to be sure to do is to remind everybody to stay connected with us at the Cleanup Information Network or cluin.org. We have a number of podcasts and RSS feeds, as well as monthly newsletters such as Tech Direct. You're welcome to sign up for those to be alerted when webinars such as today's are available for open registration. I will also remind everyone that copies of the presentation materials, along with information about our speakers and a link to our feedback form, including a whole collection of resources on our topic today, including some of the links that our speakers highlighted, are already available on that seminar feedback seminar homepage. So again, we've got a QR code. If you get a cell phone out, take a quick snap. That should jump you right to the page. Otherwise, I've put it in the meeting chat for today's session. And then one of the most common questions I get is if we offer CEUs or PDHs for our webinars. While we don't offer those types of credit hours, you can get a participation certificate if you submit the feedback form. So I encourage you to visit the seminar homepage and click on that feedback form link, fill that out. And at the very bottom of the form, there'll be a box to check to certify you are here for the whole live session. As soon as you check that box and submit your feedback, you'll then immediately have access to a participation certificate that you can print out or save for your own records. Oftentimes, our attendees are able to get credit for sitting in on these sessions with that certificate, including their registration email and a copy of the materials that, as I noted, are already available on the homepage. And if you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying today's webinar, guess what? If you made it this far, you still get to fill out that feedback form link as well, because in the upper right corner in the online version of our recorded webinar, there'll be a button to that feedback form link that you can now click to send in your feedback based off the replay and get your own certificate certificate. Just make sure you check that box at the bottom. Otherwise, we won't generate a certificate. So with that, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. We had about 170 live attendees from all over the US. And again, all of the speakers and attendees who took time out of their busy schedules to share their time and expertise. So with that, I'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.